You're listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2014 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud.
Tonight's program with Adam Michnik and Yasmin El-Rashidi is titled Fomenting Democracy, From Poland's Solidarity to Egypt's Tahrir Square, and it was occasioned by the 25th anniversary of the Polish Roundtable Talks, which took place in Warsaw. And let's just pause for a minute to consider that a decade into the 21st century, Poland is a liberal democracy, a fully fledged member of the Western community, and at the beginning of the 20th century, Poland was a mere historical concept, considered by many politically to be a lost cause. The roundtable talks, in which Adam Michnik played a key role, led to the election of June 4, 1989, which brought a landslide victory to the Solidarity Movement and paved the way to a free and democratic Poland, as well as the final abolition of communism in that country. The dictatorship was overthrown by the ballot. In one of his letters from prison in 1985, Adam Michnik wrote, "We must act with consistency and, above all, with patience. One cannot repeat this humble word too often. It is a declaration of an ambitious and persistent people, a declaration of unbending hope." How does or can one revolution give hope to another? Under martial law in Poland, Poles referred to General Jaruzelski as Pinochelski, the Chilean dictator who ousted Allende. And Michnik writes that hearing the first news of the Prague Spring, also while behind bars, was like a breath of fresh air. It preserved hope. He was also behind bars when he learned the chilling news that the Russian tanks were on the streets of Prague. In 2011, the revolutions that swept the Middle East surprised and captivated the world. The youth of Egypt made history, but the gains of revolution, so intoxicating, have tragically not yet led to democracy. In the aftermath of Tahrir Square and the current military dictatorship in Egypt, where do Egypt's young democracy activists find hope? Egyptian journalist Yasmin El-Rashidi has been on the ground in Cairo, brilliantly chronicling the triumph and then the heartbreak of her country's struggle for freedom. Her essays appear in the New York Review of Books and have been widely anthologized. A collection of her writing, The Battle for Egypt, was published as an ebook, and her writing was nominated for an Amnesty International Media Award. She has a new book in the works, which we're looking forward to, and we're so thrilled to have this brave and talented writer here all the way from Cairo tonight to join us. Adam Michnik is the founder and editor-in-chief of Gazeta Wyborcza, a daily often referred to as the New York Times of Eastern Europe. I don't know if they consider that a compliment. He spent a total of 6 years in prison between 1965 and 1986, detained by the communist regime for his dissident activities. He served as a member of Poland's first non-communist parliament. He's the recipient of many honors, among them the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award. And among his recent books are An Uncanny Era, Conversations Between Václav Havel and Adam Michnik, and The Trouble with History, Morality, Revolution, and Counter-Revolution. And our moderator tonight, we're very, very fortunate to have Mike Schuster, an award-winning diplomatic correspondent and former roving foreign correspondent for NPR News. Mike's reported from the Middle East and Moscow and literally everywhere in between. He's the recipient of numerous honors for his reporting. He's a senior fellow currently at the USC Berkle Center for International Affairs. And we also welcome our translator for Mr. Michnik tonight, Mr. Joseph Sobelman. So please join me in welcoming our distinguished guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Louise, and it's very nice to be back at Aloud. I've participated some years ago in this program. I think it's one of LA's great programs, so thank you for inviting me. I'd like to start off this conversation so that we get Yasmin and Adam talking to each other as well as answering questions. So let me start this way. Both of you in your recent writings write extensively about revolution and the experiences in your each of your country, and you write, both of you, about and the unfinished nature of the revolutions that you've lived through. First, Yasmin, tell us what you mean by that.
I mean, I think when we first, on January 25th, 2011, when we realized that this protest that we had started was much bigger than we ever anticipated it to be, as the momentum built over the 18 days and Mubarak stepped down, I think in our minds, that was the completion. We thought that that was the revolution. But I think it's become clear that that was just the beginning of what will be a process that will probably take decades, and that while we ousted a leader and a system, and I think in particular a mindset, was still very much in place.
Adam, what about Poland? Poland's political life has evolved much further, and I think we in the United States and in the West think that all's well with Poland. But you still raise the question of its revolution and its possibly unfinished nature of it. Talk about that a little bit.
Każda rewolucja zawsze wyzwala ogromne nadzieje.
Every revolution frees great expectations.
I ludziom zaangażowanym w tą rewolucję wydaje się, że nastąpi cud. I że będziemy bogaci jak Amerykanie, zaopiekowani jak Szwedzi i będziemy mogli tak pracować jak w Polsce pod komunistami, czyli kiepską.
And the people engaged in that revolution believe that once it's done, will be as well-to-do as the Americans, will be as well taken care of as the Swedes, and we will be working as hard as the Poles, which is actually pretty crappy.
Ale cud się nie dokonuje.
Well, the miracle just didn't happen.
Natomiast ludzie, tak jak powiedziała i Jasmin, pozostają dalej tacy, jacy byli przedtem.
Well, the people remain as they were before.
Każda rewolucja ma swoje dwie fazy. Pierwsza faza to jest walka o wolność. Druga faza to jest walka o władzę.
Every revolution has two phases. Phases. The first phase is the fight for freedom. The second phase is the fight for power.
I w tej walce o władzę wolność jest dla wszystkich. Dla mądrych i dla szlachetnych oraz dla głupich i dla podłych.
And in that first phase, freedom is for everybody, for the smart people, the good ones, the good-for-nothings and outright jerks.
Ja się w Polsce zawsze bałem takiego scenariusza rewolucji z Iranu. Ja się bałem, że kiedy wreszcie wywalczymy wolność, to w miejsce dyktatury komunistycznej przyjdzie taka dyktatura nacjonalistyczno-fundamentalistyczna. Ja się bałem naszych polskich katolickich ajatollahów.
Well, forever I was concerned with the fact that our revolution may turn into a Iranian revolution. That is, we will have another phase, another dictatorship by our right-wing Catholic hardliners and, well, pretty much Ayatollahs.
But that turned out not to be the case.
Nie zdarzyło się, dlatego że polskie elity w tym momencie zdały egzamin z demokracji.
It didn't happen because the Polish elites passed the exam, which is called democracy.
W Polsce udało się, zbudować taką filozofię Polski wspólnej, że Polska jest dla wszystkich.
We succeeded in Poland in developing a philosophy that Poland is a common thing, something for everybody.
I mnie się wydaje, że to było takie wielkie zwycięstwo Polaków nad własną historią, bo myśmy takich tradycji wcześniej nie mieli.
And I believe that this was a great victory for the Poles over their own history, because we did not have such traditions.
I kiedy patrzyłem na rewolucję egipską, to widziałem, że te tendencje bractwa muzułmańskiego, że one jakby przechwytują rewolucję, bo są najlepiej zorganizowane, ale że oni nie chcą wolności. Oni chcą narzucić swój model wszystkim Egipcjanom.
When I was observing the Egyptian revolution, I'm sorry, I realized that the Muslim Brotherhood was not supporting the revolution. Actually, what they wanted to do, they wanted to take it over. They wanted to enforce their own model on the Egyptian people.
Takie tendencje zawsze są po każdej rewolucji.
This is a quite common tendency after each and any revolution.
To są ludzie, którzy mówią, jeżeli ja jestem w mniejszości, a ty rządzisz, to ja się domagam dla siebie praw, bo taka jest twoja zasada. Kiedy ja rządzę, pozbawiam ciebie praw, bo taka jest moja zasada.
Well, these people's way of thinking is that when you have the power, when you govern, and I'm in the minority, I demand rights for myself. But when I am at power, when I rule, my rule is your rule.
Yasmin, what do you think of that? Are there lessons in the experience of the Poles for the people of Cairo and the people of Egypt in what the political process that they're going through now?
Reading Adam's book of conversations, I was saying before we started this discussion that every single page I bookmarked, because I think that I wish I had read it in 2011 or 2010, and I wish that we had been, I think that we were thrown into revolution, and it was only with revolution that we took an interest in the other histories and in the other countries that had already gone through revolution. And I feel that in the process we made a lot of mistakes. And we were so, I think, captivated by this, utopic atmosphere and the euphoria of the 18 days. There was this, naive belief that could continue forever, really. We didn't, there wasn't, even to have looked back on Egypt's own history and what happened after our revolution of 52 would have been to understand, what comes after you oust the leader.
You say that the demonstrators didn't know much about Egypt's own history, their own history. And Adam, one of the books just being published in the United States of your writing is called The Trouble with History. What's the trouble with history?
Historia to jest najpierw ciężar historii, która wisi nad naszą głową. To znaczy, to jest przekonanie, że jesteśmy więźniami pewnych zbiorowych narodowych stereotypów.
The problem with history is the weight that it puts over our heads. The problem with it is that we are the prisoners of certain stereotypes that come with our history.
Mnie się wydaje, że w Polsce ten proces był długoletni. Przynajmniej w moim doświadczeniu ten proces się zaczął gdzieś w 65 roku, a skończył w 89, czyli trwał ćwierćwiecze.
In my experience, the process in Poland, the revolutionary process in Poland, was a long-term affair. It started somewhere in 1965 and finally came to its fruition in 1989.
Więc najpierw to oznaczało, że trzeba wyzwolić się od tych stereotypów, które narzuca nam reżim.
Well, we realized that within this 25-year-old period that first we need to free ourselves from the stereotypes that were forced upon us by the regime.
Więc w Polsce to była z jednej strony ideologia komunistyczna, a więc zapewnik uważano, że jest gospodarka planowa, a nie rynkowa. Zapewnik uważano, że jest kierownicza rola partii komunistycznej.
Well, the issue was twofold. It was a given that the economy needs to be, which is the communist given, the economy needs to be planned, not market driven.
I że jest kierownicza rola partii.
And the party has a leading role in this process.
The Communist included. Party you're talking about. The Communist Party.
The Polish Communist Party.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I teraz drugim takim elementem, którym potrafiono szantażować społeczeństwo, to jest argument nacjonalistyczny. Po wojnie Polska znalazła się w nowych granicach. Rosja sowiecka nam zabrała wschodnią część Polski, a przyłączyła do Polski wschodnią część Niemiec.
Well, the second element of it was the nationalist blackmail. After World War II, Poland found itself in a completely different political situation. The Soviet Russia, the Soviet Union, took away from Poland our eastern territories and gave us a part of Germany.
I argument był taki, że jeżeli będziecie się buntować, to Niemcy zabiorą nam na nasze ziemie na zachodzie.
And the argument or the reasoning was there that if you guys are going to rebel against the situation, then the Germans would take away that part that you have just received from us.
Da, więc najpierw trzeba było wyzwolić się intelektualnie i moralnie, a potem należało w jakiś sposób zacząć organizować się niezależnie od władzy państwowej.
Well, first we needed to refashion ourselves intellectually and morally, and then we needed to organize ourselves somehow independent of government power.
Trzeba było odrzucić tą utopijną wizję społeczeństwa doskonałego i wolnego od konfliktów.
We had to reject the utopian vision of a society, of an ideal society, and a society devoid of any conflicts.
Wolne od konfliktów może być tylko społeczeństwo albo w obozie koncentracyjnym, albo na cmentarzu.
Well, free of conflicts can be only a society that's in a concentration camp or in a cemetery.
To niemożliwe jest. W związku z tym musimy powiedzieć sobie, że Bo po pierwsze, zgadzamy się na to, że jesteśmy różni, różnimy się. A po drugie, że my różniący się musimy się wziąć za ręce, żeby się reżimowi nie dać.
We had to realize two things. First, we are different. And the second thing, that there is an absolute necessity for us, the ones that are different, to join hands to be able to fight the system.
Yasmin, you expressed a feeling that there wasn't enough history in your in the Egyptian struggle as it was changing rapidly. Why was there so little appreciation and focus on history in Egypt?
I think it's a product of our education system, where you're taught a particular version of history. And my generation grew up with one, you know, we only knew one president. And so there was a particular narrative that you were taught. And the educational system didn't, it's a system of memorization. It's based on memorization. You're not given, you're not encouraged to really think. And I think part of the result of that, what, picking up from what Adam just said about we who were different had to come together and work together, is that we'd never done that before. We didn't even know how to have a conversation, and that's where we failed. Suddenly given space to have your own voice, which was a very new experience, everyone wanted their voice to be heard, and nobody was able to make compromises and sit down together and think, how can we make this work together?
So where do you think Egypt is now? It's been through, two governments or two presidents after the fall of Mubarak, and it's quite complicated. And if I read it correctly, the electorate or the people are fragmented. How do you see the situation today?
I think the people are less fragmented than the Western media portrays them to be. I think when one looks back over what happened in the summer when Morsi was ousted, and the part of the narrative that has been left out of the Western media was that millions of people took to the streets, first calling for him to hold early elections, but then calling for the army to intervene. There was definitely a unity in that and in what the people were asking for. Where we are now is that, unfortunately, rather than, you know, create an inclusive system and a system where there is a space for the Islamists and there is a space for dissident voices, we've reverted back to a system that feels very much like the one we had before 2011, where there's no space for opposition. I think one important thing to remember and one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, that the Egyptian people, this was their choice, having had 2.5 years of turmoil, having experienced different forms of government, having voted in an Islamist government. This was their choosing. And
their choosing of
to vote in a military man. Mm-hmm. And I think as someone who writes, you know, I don't take a position on this, and for the record, I did not vote for Sisi, but I think it's important to give the people a bit more credit than especially the West is giving them, in that this was their choice, and they were making that choice out of experience.
Adam, when you look at Egypt, what do you see?
Przede wszystkim odczuwam wielką radość, że ten stereotyp, że narody arabskie są jakby skazane na życie w zniewoleniu, się okazał kompletnie nieprawdziwy.
I am overjoyed by the fact that the stereotype that the Arab nations are condemned to a slavery-like life is wrong and untrue.
Ja pamiętam, jak to mówiło się o Polakach. Po co Polakom wolność? Polakom wolność może potrzebna tylko po to, żeby organizować pogromy antysemickie, a tymczasem mamy 25 lat wolności, nie było żadnego pogromu antysemickiego.
Well, it used to be said as well about the Poles. They don't need freedom. What do I need freedom for? To organize pogroms? We have, what, 20 years of freedom now and not a single pogrom so far.
To była wielka nadzieja dla wszystkich przyjaciół wolności. To, co się stało w Egipcie. Teraz moim zdaniem w Egipcie, w Libii i w Syrii to są trzy różne sytuacje.
The Tahrir Square events were a great hope. And I think that the situation in Egypt, in Libya and in Syria are three different situations.
W Syrii mamy do czynienia z wojną domową, gdzie stary reżim dyktatorski broni swoich pozycji. Przeciw niemu uformował się potężny obóz związany z fundamentalizmem islamskim i są zwolennicy syryjskiej demokracji.
In Syria, it is actually a civil war against the government, and from this war, a camp of fundamentalists has been created, has formed, as well as a dissident camp.
W Libii po upadku Gaddafiego jest po prostu domowa wojna międzyplemienna.
In Libya, after the fall of Gaddafi, we're dealing with basically a tribal war. It's a civil war, a tribal war.
W Egipcie demokrata egipski jest w bardzo trudnej sytuacji, bo z jednej strony ma generałów, z drugiej strony ajatollahów.
The Egyptian Democrat is a very precarious situation. On one side, he has the generals, and the other side, the ayatollahs.
Oczywiście ja się zgadzam z tą opinią Jasminy, że Al-Sisi powinien dostać kredyt od społeczeństwa.
I agree with Yasmin's opinion that Al-Sisi should receive a credit from the society.
Ale to nie może być poparcie bezwarunkowe. To znaczy on musi tak rządzić, że on wie, że ma do czynienia z świadomą swoich praw opinią publiczną.
But he has to rule in such way as to present to the people that he's dealing with a society that is conscious of their rights and demands.
Przecież w Ukrainie Janukowicz też został wybrany demokratycznie.
Yanukovych in Ukraine, the Ukraine was also democratically elected.
Ale w ten sposób rządził, że deptał wszystkie demokratyczne zasady.
But he ruled by trampling on all democratic principles.
I rewolucja na Majdanie to była rewolucja przeciwko deptaniu zasad demokratycznych.
And the revolution, the uprising on the Maidan, it was an uprising against trampling of all the democratic rules and principles.
To jest jeszcze jedno, to chcę powiedzieć, bo zapomnę. Mianowicie opowiadano mi, że Władimir Putin, jak zobaczył w telewizorze Mubaraka na ławie oskarżonych, wpadł w histerię.
One more thing before I forget it. I've been told that when Vladimir Putin saw Mubarak in front of a court being accused of all that he was accused of, Putin became just hysterical.
Dlaczego? Bo on zobaczył, że Mubarak, który miał za sobą wszystko, aparat bezpieczeństwa, wojsko, administrację, propagandę, pieniądze amerykańskie, wszystko miał. Nagle zawalił się, zobaczył, on Putin zobaczył, że jego to samo może spotkać.
Well, he realized all of a sudden that Mubarak, who had in his grip everything, the military, the security apparatus, everything, even American money that supported him, he realized that he can end up, Putin may end up in Mubarak's place.
You brought up actually the two key conflicts that provide context for both the Polish experience and the Egyptian experience. But and I want to get back to Putin and Ukraine. But first, what about the context of the wider Middle East for Egypt? How has the experience in Egypt been affected by the violence that's sweeping the Middle East from Libya to Syria?
I think if anything, there's obviously a refugee situation now. We have a lot of Syrian refugees and refugees from the region more broadly coming into Egypt. But it has sort of solidified Sisi's position and how people feel about the choice they made, because they feel, and this is, you know, again, I want to emphasize that I don't have, it's not a position, it's just as a reporting on this. I'm conveying this. It has, people feel that they were saved from the general surge in militant Islam that we are seeing in other places. And with ISIS on the streets of Cairo, I mean, in the past few months you hear, and especially as, you know, ISIS and the whole, that, you know, that news takes over, you hear people say that, you know, we were saved from this, that, you know, that this was the path that we were going down and we were saved from it by the military.
Do you think that's true?
No, I think it's really dangerous to sort of umbrella all the Islamist factions and political Islam. I feel it's dangerous to group it together and make such sweeping generalizations. You know, I was naive, and post Mubarak, I thought we should give the Muslim Brotherhood a chance. And I believed that they supported the revolution and were critical to making it happen. They came out on the streets and they helped make the critical mass that resulted in Mubarak's ousting.
The Islamists.
Mm-hmm. In coming into power, I think that, you know, as Adam said, you have a democratically elected leader. It doesn't mean you have a democracy. And we had as severe a dictatorship with Morsi as we did, I believe, under Mubarak. And I think they were quite lenient with some of the militant Islamist factions in the region. There was definitely, like, blacklists were dropped. People were allowed in the borders. Definitely weapons were allowed in the borders. I don't think we were heading in a good direction. I'm not sure that we would, you know, end up like Iraq because we have the army, and I don't think they would allow that to happen. But what concerns me more now is that once again we're in a situation where we have this youth population that is 60% of the population is under the age of 25. They had great expectations with the revolution. The economy is still bad. There is still struggle. There's a sense of frustration growing. So the Islamist question to me is not the concern. You know, it's more that there is once again this tension building on the streets and you feel it. And on a more fundamental level, it's the question of our moral value system, which we have proven, you know, across generations in Egypt, that While we say we want a different system and we want a different kind of justice, once again we are employing everything that we tried to reject and revolt against.
So what you're saying is the revolution has come full circle?
I don't like to think of it that way. I mean, in a sense, what's different is that something which is overlooked is that something fundamental has changed in Egyptians.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were not, they broke this barrier of fear. They took to the streets. Mubarak was ousted. They elected Morsi. Morsi failed them. They took to the streets again and ousted him. And, you know, everyone talks about this terrible thing that is the military dictatorship. You're not really giving Egyptians credit. If the military, if Sisi fails them again, they will take to the streets again.
Mm. Now let me get back. You can add something if you like, but I'd like to get back to Ukraine because Ukraine unexpectedly has become an important element of the political context for Poland, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about that.
Okay. W odróżnieniu od Egiptu, o Ukrainie mało kto wcześniej słyszał w ogóle.
As opposed to Egypt, very few people heard before of the Ukraine.
Dla obserwatorów amerykańskich, francuskich, angielskich, Ukraina to była Rosja.
For the American, French, British observers, Ukraine, it was Russia.
Więc przede wszystkim, co się okazało nowe, to, że Ukraina istnieje jako samodzielny podmiot.
All of a sudden it became obvious that Ukraine, the Ukraine, exists as itself.
Przy czym, tak jak mówiła Jasmina, tak i na Ukrainie nie wszystko jest czarno-białe.
Well, just as Jasmin presented it, also in the Ukraine, not everything is black and white.
Tam też są wewnętrzne napięcia, zróżnicowania, konflikty, ale jedno jest jasne. W stosunku do Rosji, Ukraina jest zintegrowana.
Well, there are internal strifes, there are differences and so on. However, as far as Russia is concerned, the Ukraine is united.
Dlaczego Putin jest tak agresywny? Są dwa powody.
Why is Putin so aggressive in that area? There are two reasons.
Po pierwsze, on chce jakoś zrekonstruować dawny Związek Sowiecki i on to teraz nazywa Unią Eurazjatycką.
First, Putin wants to reconstruct the previous Soviet Union, and now he calls it a Euro-Asian Union.
A drugi powód jest taki, że jego straszne sny w nocy, to jest plac Tahrir w Kairze i Majdan w Kijowie.
And he has two bad dreams. That's the Tahrir Square in Egypt, in Cairo, and the Majdan in the Ukraine.
On już widzi Majdan na Placu Czerwonym w Moskwie.
He already can picture Majdan or Tahrir Square on the Red Square in Moscow.
I to jest jego najczarniejszy sen.
It's his nightmare.
Dlatego, że dla podpułkownika KGB nie ma nic straszniejszego niż ludzie, którzy mówią to, co myślą.
Because for a junior colonel of the KGB, there is nothing worse than a bunch of people saying what they really think.
Ja myślę, że w stosunku do Ukrainy Putin stosuje retorykę Adolfa Hitlera.
It is my belief that as far as Ukraine goes, Putin is applying the Adolf Hitler rhetoric.
To nie ja wymyśliłem, tylko mój przyjaciel, rosyjski historyk Andrzej Zubow.
It is not my idea, it's not my definition. It was contrived and published by a Russian historian, Andrzej, my friend Andrzej Zubow.
Który mieszka w Moskwie.
He lives in Moscow.
I on tam to napisał. No.
He wrote it there.
Co dowodzi, że jednak nie cała Rosja stanęła na baczność przed podpułkownikiem KGB.
That proves that not the whole of Russia is standing at attention before the junior colonel of the KGB.
Moim zdaniem cała retoryka Hitlera była taka. On mówił bardzo dużo o pokoju. Ja tylko chcę Nadrenię zmilitaryzować. No końcu mogę. No Austria, no już tam mówią po niemiecku wszyscy. No przecież to jest niemiecki kraj. Czechosłowacja, no Sudety, Karlsbad, Marienbad. To są wszystko Niemcy. Przecież dlaczego ja tego nie mam wziąć?
Well, when Hitler spoke, he spoke of peace. And yeah, okay, I would like to militarize Rhineland. Why not? I can't I? Austria, well, gee, it's actually, everybody speaks German there, so why not? The Sudeten, Czechoslovakia, you know, Karlsbad, whatever.
Marienbad.
Marienbad, yeah, all these are German names, so.
Gdańsk, Danzig, to Niemcy, no. Zabrać to Polsce, dlaczego nie, no? Dać Hitlerowi, no.
Well, Gdańsk, Danzig, let's take it away from Poland, let's give it to Hitler.
Otóż dzisiaj to myślenie odżywa. Nie wolno denerwować Putina.
Well, this way of thinking is being revived nowadays. Don't get Putin pissed off.
Natomiast ja jestem zdania, że Putina trzeba zatrzymać. I dlatego mi się bardzo podobały trzy ostatnie przemówienia na ten temat Baracka Obamy. No.
I believe that Putin needs to be stopped. Therefore, I liked very much the three last speeches on the subject by Barack Obama.
W Waszyngtonie, w Warszawie i w Tallinie.
In Washington, in Warsaw, in Tallinn.
Tallinn, Estonia.
Estonia.
Yeah. I ja nie wiem, co będzie dalej, dlatego że Putin wpadł w pułapkę, którą sam na siebie zastawił.
I have no idea what's going to happen further on because Putin is trapped in a snare that he put out for himself.
On jakby otworzył puszkę Pandory i te wszystkie wielkorosyjskie potwory wyszły stamtąd.
He opened up the Pandora's box and all the grand Russians monsters crawled out of there.
I teraz oni będą krytykowali Putina, że on jest zbyt ostrożny. Idź na Kijów, Putin, na Kijów, no.
And now those monsters will criticize Putin. They'll egg him on. You're too cautious. Go ahead, go, take Kiev.
To jest rewolta wielkorosyjskiej czarnej sotni. Czarna sotnia. Revolt.
This is a revolt of the great Russian Black Sotnya. That was a Sotnya is a term for a Tatar. I'm sorry, Cossack military group.
Oni nam mogą zafundować taki faszyzm, że Putina jeszcze będziemy wspominać jako liberała. No.
They can bestow upon us a sort of fascism that we just as well may remember Putin as a liberal.
Ale nim będziemy go tak wspominać, to ta czarna sotnia powiesi Putina na moskiewskiej latarni.
But before we start remembering him as such, the same Black Sotnya is going to string him up on a Moscow street light.
Nie będę po nim płakał.
I'm not going to cry after him.
I don't think I wouldn't imagine you would. But and you approach this issue with good humor and wit. But I think it's true that some of your countrymen are much more threatened and concerned about Ukraine. Are they justified in that?
Nie. Ja bym się z tym nie zgodził. Nie. Jednak w Polsce my mamy poczucie, że należymy do NATO i że bardzo trudno by było oderwać od Polski część terytorium, tak jak Putin zrobił z Krymem. No.
Well, in Poland, we strongly believe that we do belong to NATO, and I think it'll be very much more difficult to separate from Poland part of this country as Putin did with the Ukraine.
Nie, się wydaje, że jednak na Ukrainie codziennie zabijają ludzi. Jednak ja bym tego z Polską nie porównywał.
In the Ukraine, people get killed daily. I would not compare it with the situation in Poland.
Jeżeli ja bym się czegoś dla Polski bał, to ja bym się bał, że Putin swoją polityką ożywi te tendencje rusofobiczne w Polsce.
What I am afraid of, rather, is that Putin's policy would reactivate rusophobic tendencies, the hate to Russia.
Ja nie jestem rusofobem, ja jestem tylko antysowieckim rusofilem.
I am not rusophobic. I am just an anti-Soviet rusophile.
Let's talk a little bit about the United States, and then I'll open up for questions from the public. A simple question: what should the United States do first about Egypt?
I think that Obama, as much as we have all admired him, his administration has proven that they don't really have much of a policy, foreign policy towards the Middle East, and they have been very piecemeal about how they've dealt with things there. And I think as far as Egyptians are concerned, it would be really nice if America kept out of our politics for now. I mean, they don't have a firm policy. They don't have a firm foreign policy, and that became really clear during 2011 with how they changed. Their language was very fluid, and then
the Americans.
Their language was very fluid, and then suddenly they changed position, which is being repeated again these days. With, you know, it's a coup, and then they changed their language a little bit, and now they're suddenly on Sisi's side.
Pytanie mam do Jasminy. A jakiej ty byś oczekiwała po polityki amerykańskiej w stosunku do Egiptu?
I have a question for you, Jasmine. What kind of American policy would you expect from the United States?
Well, it's all about their interests, of course, and it's really hard to figure out what's happening in the region. The tides are changing so fast. So we don't, on some level, we don't expect... It's not that we expect anything different. I think it's more about the tone, and there's something extremely patronizing, condescending about how this narrative, a particular narrative they have tried to impose over you know, Egypt and the Egyptian story, which you're seeing in the U.S. media too. The events of this, of last summer were, you know, narrated, and there was no attempt to convey or portray the other, another side of a story, or to give a full picture of something.
To znaczy, jeżeli ja dobrze rozumiem, to gdyby się ciebie zapytał, Jasmino, Obama, co ty mu radzisz, to byś mu odpowiedziała, że nic mu nie radzisz.
So, Yasmin, if I'd ask you, if I'd say, Obama, what is your advice to him? Your answer would be nothing?
That's a hard question. Well, I think you have the answer, so you should
have. And Adam?
Ja bym, po pierwsze, spróbował zrozumieć, skąd się bierze ta chwiejność polityki amerykańskiej.
Well, at first I would try to understand where does this wobbliness, this lack of grounding in American policy.
Ameryka się bardzo bała destabilizacji na Bliskim Wschodzie.
America was afraid of destabilization on the Middle East.
Dlatego wspierała Mubaraka, który był z punktu widzenia Ameryki politykiem przewidywalnym.
This is why America supported Mubarak, because from American point of view, he was a predictable politician.
No dobrze, ale kiedy Egipcjanie wyrzucili Mubaraka, to Ameryka nie mogła go bronić wbrew Egipcjanom.
But when the Egyptians kicked Mubarak out, America couldn't afford to defend them against the Egyptians.
To Egipcjanie wybrali Mursiego. Ameryka nie bardzo lubi bractwo muzułmańskie, ale uznała to.
Well, the Egyptians choose mercy. And the America, well, America, not Americans, America does not necessarily favors the Islamic Brotherhood, but it happened.
To Egipcjanie wyrzucili Mursiego.
Well, then the Egyptian kicked out Mursi.
Ameryka nie lubi wojskowych zamachów stanu, ale uznała to.
Well, America doesn't like in particular military takeovers, but it happened.
America has no problem with coups, with military takeovers when they're behind them.
Jak popiera, tak, ale tutaj nie popierała.
Well, yeah, when they support them, yes, but here they didn't support them.
I w związku z tym, po pierwsze, to jeżeli sytuacja w Egipcie jest tak niejasna, to trudno, żeby polityka amerykańska wobec Egiptu była jasna.
On the other hand, since the situation in Egypt is so unclear, well, it's hard to expect that American policy would be much clearer.
Teraz, jeśli chodzi o patronizowanie.
As far as patronizing goes.
No, wiadomo, że polityka amerykańska jest wyjątkowo arogancka i niezręczna. To wiadomo.
It is common knowledge that the American policy is extremely arrogant and unwieldy, ungainly.
Ja to widzę w relacjach polsko-amerykańskich.
I can see it in Polish-American relations.
W pewnym momencie ja sobie powiedziałem, że ja nie pozwolę się patronizować. No.
Well, at this point I told myself that I will not allow myself to be patronized.
Na początku moi amerykańscy rozmówcy byli zdziwieni.
At first, my American interlocutors were somewhat befuddled.
Co ten tu Polak z nami tak rozmawia? A dlaczego? I jakim prawem właściwie?
How dare this Pole speaks to us in this manner, and by what right?
A potem się przyzwyczaili.
And then they got used to it.
What about Ukraine? What should the United States do about Ukraine?
Ja uważam, że powinny robić to, co robią, tylko konsekwentnie.
I believe that the United States should do what they're doing, except with more consequently, more sturdily.
To znaczy, potrzeba przygotować euroamerykański projekt zabezpieczenia energetycznego Europy i uniezależnienia od Rosji.
First of all, a Euro-American project needs to be prepared to make Europe independent from Russian supply of energy.
Trzeba pomyśleć o rodzaju euroamerykańskiego planu Marshalla dla Ukrainy.
We need to think of a Euro-American Marshall Plan for the Ukraine.
Dlatego, że jeżeli na Ukrainie transformacja zakończy się sukcesem, powiedzmy, tak jak w Polsce, to jest bomba zegarowa podłożona pod wielkorosyjski autorytaryzm.
Because should the situation in Ukraine resolve itself as in same manner or similar manner as in Poland, then it is a time bomb placed under the Russian grandeur schemes.
I powinna kontynuować politykę sankcji w stosunku do Putina.
And America should continue its policy of sanctions against Putin.
Can I add that in terms of the Middle East, I think that part of the problem with the US and its foreign policy or general, how it's been dealing with the past few years, is that its language, I think there's a deficit in its language. The term democracy, in a sense, has lost value when its position has wavered so much, and when it keeps trying to impose or speak about the system that we should employ, but it has double standards when it comes to that system.
To prawda jest, to jest prawda. Niemniej jednak, ja się cieszę, że istnieje Ameryka, bo jakby nie było Ameryki, wszystko, co ty mówisz, to prawda jest, ale gdyby nie było Ameryki, to świat byłby gorszy.
Well, it's what you're saying, everything what you're saying is true. However, I'm very happy that America exists, because if it wouldn't be for America, the world would be in a much bigger mess.
Let's open it to questions.
To Ms. Al-Rashidi, is the Sisi government, the military government, capable of being a transitional government to something more democratic? Is that possible?
I think if the people demanded that of the Sisi government, I think it would be possible. The problem is, I think that the people will settle for the Sisi government being reelected and reelected and reelected. That's my fear. But I think if the people put pressure on that government, I think that they would transition out.
Another question.
Hi, thank you so much. I was wondering if you would comment briefly in the example for both Poland and Egypt about the role of imagination and community in sustaining a revolution and having a successful revolution.
No to pytanie to jest temat na trzy prace doktorskie. No.
Well, it's a subject of at least three doctoral dissertations.
Najprościej
Doctor.
Najprost.
Proceed, doctor.
Jak?
Kontynuuj, doktorze.
Najprościej mówiąc, mnie się wydaje, że pierwszym takim momentem w Polsce ważnym to było to, że ludzie muszą nauczyć się wspólnie myśleć, wspólnie rozmawiać, niezależnie od języka i ideologii władzy.
I think the experience from the Polish events shows us that people need to learn, think together, communicate together, independently of the ideology put on or presented or forced on by the government.
Później, że ci ludzie mogą się zacząć spotykać, organizować niezależnie od władzy.
Later on, the people should be able to get together, organize independently of any governmental power.
Jeżeli oni się jakoś zorganizują, to będą mogli w stosunku do władzy wysuwać jakieś postulaty, domagać się ustępstw władzy pod presją społeczną.
If they can achieve that understanding, they would be able to present the government with prerogatives, with demands, and ask for concessions.
I stąd się wzięła u nas ta taka nadzieja, że zmiany są możliwe bez rewolucji, bez przemocy.
And this is where a hope has developed in our country, that changes are possible without a revolution, without a physical revolution.
Że tak jak w Hiszpanii było możliwe zlikwidowanie dyktatury generała Franco przez system kompromisów, że to samo być może będzie kiedyś możliwe w Polsce.
And just as it was possible in Spain to oust the dictator General Franco through compromises, so it probably, we hope, or hopefully, it would be possible also in Poland.
A z drugiej strony powstało myślenie, że pewne potrzeby można zaspokajać, pomijając władzę komunistyczną.
And on the other hand, it also became obvious to us that some needs can be provided for without the help or need for a communist government.
Więc jeżeli gazety komunistyczne kłamią, zacznijmy wydawać własną gazetę, która prawdę mówi.
Well, if the communist papers lie, let's start printing our own papers who tell the truth.
Jeżeli szkoły komunistyczne kłamią, załóżmy nasz własny, niezależny, nieoficjalny uniwersytet.
If the communist schools lie, let's form our own independent university system, teaching system.
Krótko mówiąc, spróbujmy poza systemem zbudować własne społeczeństwo obywatelskie, civil society.
Let's try build our own civil society outside of the communist system.
I w momencie, kiedy nadchodzi sytuacja kryzysowa, jak to się w Polsce wydarzyło w sierpniu 1989 roku podczas wielkiej szali strajków.
When it comes to a crisis situation, as it happened in Poland in 1980 during the general strike,
to wtedy ci ludzie, którzy już czytali te niezależne wydawnictwa, gazetki, przeszli przez ten niezależny uniwersytet, oni wiedzieli, jak formułować polityczne postulaty strajkujących.
That allowed the people that read the independent papers, the independent flyers that went through the independent, outside of the system, university program, these people knew how to formulate their postulates and how to formulate their demands.
Oczywiście w Polsce tu jeszcze jedno było ważne, mianowicie niezwykle istotna rola Kościoła katolickiego.
In Poland, of great importance was also the role of the Catholic Church.
Ale nigdy opozycja nie pozwoliła narzucić sobie dyktatu katolickiego duchowieństwa.
However, the opposition never allowed itself to be overpowered by the dictate of the Catholic Church.
I think we've got time for
and we wanted to hear just Yasmin's answer.
Okay.
I feel he wrote the dissertation.
Okay, so we have time for a question over here.
Should we take one more?
Okay. It's to Mr. Michnik again. Some American foreign policy pundits who style themselves as realists have asserted that the United States and NATO and the EU provoked Russia and provoked Putin by pushing itself up to the borders of Russia, and that the situation we're dealing with now was of our own doing. How do you feel about that?
A kto sprowokował Hitlera?
And who provoked Hitler?
No, ktoś go sprowokował, że na napad na cały świat. No.
Well, somebody had to provoke him since he attacked the whole world.
Nie, no w ogóle ta teza, że ja ją oczywiście znam tę tezę, to jest taka trochę zamerykanizowany wariant propagandy podpułkownika KGB.
I consider this an Americanized version of the propaganda by Junior Colonel Putin.
And Mike, I think we'll have to end there if you want to make a final comment or
thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming to this unusual discussion. Thank the Polish consulate. Thank Adam and Yasmin and Yosef. Thank you all for coming from so far away. And thank you, Mike. And please join us in the lobby for the book signing. Thank you.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Errant Fox. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support is provided by LA Weekly, KCRW 89.9 FM, and KUSC 91.5 FM.